And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from an undisclosed location in beautiful New York City, New York, where I am thrilled to be joined by starting shooting guard for the Los Angeles Lakers and two-time world champion?
Yes, NBA, yes, two-time NBA champion. I've been lucky.
Danny Green, yeah. How are you?
I've been well, man, thank you. Undisclosed location, yeah. This reminds me of the other days when I first started, kind of we were in a classroom. Just find a location where you can actually get this done. I'm glad we can make this happen.
Thanks well, you know, you play on LeBron's team. I can't be giving out where LeBron's team is staying because then it's going to be a zoo.
Very true. Very true. I mean, for some reason, people find out regardless. I think
it's amazing, right?
It is. We got in at 2 a.m. and, it's sad to see. Sometimes it's great to see, but sometimes it's sad to see how some parents or people use their kids. It's like 2 in the morning on a school night. And there's young kids out there, like 4 or 5 years old, and another one is 7 years old. But they find you, and they try to get, you know, pictures, autographs, and they're looking for LeBron. And, you know, he has a big heart. He tries to accommodate everybody, but it's tough, especially going in and out of cities and so many people, you know, at the front door of the hotel.
I actually don't want to write a story that badly enough to do the work, but I am always curious, like, how do they find out? Because every time I go visit teams in a hotel, there's like 50 people sitting outside.
I always wondered that as well. I figure most teams use the same hotels.
Yeah, I guess it's process of elimination. There aren't so
yeah,
many.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm trying to remember where we were recently that we didn't use the same hotel that we normally would. And I feel like a lot of people were probably waiting at that hotel scene if we were going to be there.
Suckers.
It was Houston.
Suckers.
Usually we stay at most teams stay at the Four Seasons in Houston, but there were still a lot of people at the hotel we showed up to, but I feel like a lot of them probably were waiting there and realized we weren't there and they probably went to the other location.
Do you have a fake name?
I do.
Can you give it away or no?
No, I can't right now.
Do you have a fake name that you've retired that you can give away?
No, I've used the same fake name, same alias since I've started using the alias. And I didn't start using alias until probably halfway through San Antonio years. Yeah.
No one's cracked the code. No one figured it out yet.
No. It's a very weird, strange name for me.
I don't want to out you. Let's bounce around a little bit. You began your career in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
With sort of mid-career LeBron.
Yes.
And now you are in Los Angeles with, let's say, LeBron.
It was probably mid-prime time LeBron.
Oh, we're going to talk about, you hit LeBron at a key time.
During his prime when I was there in Cleveland. He was definitely in his prime during that time. And now he has kind of later career. He's still in a good space. We said twilight is, I guess, a good way to put it.
It is amazing. He's in his twilight and I would guess right now that if the voting were conducted, he would finish second in MVP, but it would be close.
Yes. Yes, very close. In my eyes, of course, maybe I'm biased. I probably am, but he's MVP to me still and has been for the last, you know, how many years? He could arguably be the MVP every year. And the last, you know, since he's the last one, it has been at least, 10 years maybe? I don't know.
I don't know how many MVPs he has off the top of my head.
He
it's
has
like
four,
I think.
He has four, but I don't know when the last one was. But he could arguably be an MVP every year in the last
couple
years.
Yeah, we're
going
to look at him like Shaq, where it's like, ooh, I kind of feel like we maybe blew it on a couple of those. Like,
yeah,
he should have a couple
one or two
more.
He could have gotten for sure more. But, you know, this year, if we continue to play well, we continue to win, and he continues to lead us. He's always healthy. He plays all games. He sat maybe one or two games this year. And, you know, he doesn't take a day off from work. And even if he does, don't play that night, what makes him great is what he does off the court and what body wise in the weight room, being early on time, massage, just so much into his body. And, you know, just the hours. That's what makes you, I think, a true MVP.
Well, I was going to ask you, what's the difference as a teammate between prime LeBron and what I perhaps called, maybe a little prematurely called, twilight LeBron? Like, how is he different as a human being to be around every day?
I think he's kind of the same, but, you know, he's still a big goofball, still has a lot of fun. I think now, obviously, more mature, a little older, has championship DNA, knows how to win, as it became a winner, and not afraid of the big moments. He never was, but, he's very, very the same. Just the only thing difference that he's not as explosive as he used to be, but he's still very explosive. And, high IQ, understands the game, knows where to put people, knows how he wants them, where he wants them. But other than that, still the same LeBron.
It is interesting. Our minds play tricks on us. Like, we know that LeBron is less explosive, just like any older player is less explosive. Mm-hmm. But when you see
how explosive he still is. Because you kind of forget. He's still very explosive, but you forget how crazily explosive he was when he was younger.
That's what I was going to say. So
even him losing a little bit of explosiveness from his younger days still makes him extremely athletic, because he was unbelievably athletic before.
There was an NBA TV, for some reason, was showing like an old Chris Paul game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people don't remember, like, 2007-08 Chris Paul was like, you couldn't even see that guy. He was so fast. He was so explosive.
Very crafty, man. Explosive as well. He was getting to the rim too. I think he dunked on Dwight Howard when he was younger in his day. So,
all right.
Chris Paul, he can get to the rim too. He wasn't dunking a lot, but he was explosive enough to get past you, get by you, use his body strength, get fouls, and get to the rim and finish very well.
Were you still on the roster in the 2010 playoffs, LeBron's last playoffs with the Cavs?
Yes, against Boston, yeah. After that was the decision. He made the decision. That was my first year, my rookie year, and then he left to Miami, but I was there when we lost to Boston.
So what was that like to navigate as a team? Because that thing hovering over your whole season, and then that series, there was strangeness, let's say, and there was all this, he looks checked out, he's not shooting as much, does he have a shoulder injury? Like, what do you remember of that series?
I remember a lot of criticism on his part by people. I remember during that, it was a hell of a year. I remember how great he was throughout that year, and when we played Boston, even when we lost in Boston, but during the regular season, and he brought us back and damn near took over the game and won the game himself. But I also remember that the chemistry was a little strange, because we had made some trades during All-Star break. I think we got Antoine Jameson in that year. We had started J.J. Hickson pretty much all year, and then went from starting to not playing at all, basically, for the playoffs. A lot of lineup changes, so it was just different. The chemistry was different. And Shaq, in his twilight years.
Yeah.
So he was older. And, him and Bron, had a great relationship off the court, on the court. But playing-wise together, it just wasn't working the way I think most people expected it to. And that was probably part of it. Boston was a great team, You can't take any credit away from me. People act like Boston wasn't a really good team. They were a championship team. And it wasn't going to be easy beating them. But I don't think he checked out. I think he was playing that was 10 years ago.
It's a long time.
I don't know what was going through his mind, because obviously there was this behind the scenes, that behind the scenes, rumors of this and that. And obviously you see the Delonte West stories now, which is sad.
Story
back then that was like people were talking and rumors and stuff like that. So I said, I don't know where his head was, but I just remember him. I mean, every time he stepped on the floor, he balled. He tried to give it his best. And back then he wasn't as vocal and as much of a leader as, I want this here, that X's and O's. He let a lot of coaches after that. He trusted the coaches, and he still does now. But now he knows his personnel better, to where he wants how to put certain people or certain plays, that he knows where he, I want Danny here, or I want, KCP here, or Avery here. I want, JaVale here, so we can get the lob, or AD rolling and popping here. Back then he kind of did a little bit of it, but it's a lot more now in heightened sense. But, I think he just knew, he tried, but they just were the better team at that time.
You guys got stomped in Boston last night, but something you just said struck with me about go here, do this.
Mm-hmm.
First play of the game,
mm-hmm.
You win the opening tip.
Yeah.
JaVale ends up getting a lob dunk,
mm-hmm.
And you go down and set a back screen for him.
Mm-hmm.
That's a set play, I assume.
Kinda, sorta.
I don't remember seeing, that's a weird thing to see on an opening
for
tip.
For sure. I think it's an old school play. I think a lot of people have done it way back in the day. It was similar to that. And I think we did it once or twice early in the year. And,
I missed those games, I guess.
Yeah, we did it early in the year once or twice. Not too many times have we won a tip I wouldn't say comfortably, but where it didn't go far back or where it was timing. It's a timing play. And if the timing of it works, if the thing, he gets the tip and Bron gets it right there and JaVale is able to get down and run, then I'll see his man and I'll try to get a piece. Chip him off and get
so you don't talk about that before the game, like, hey, if we get this, let's
sometimes we'll say, oh, see if we can get it, let's see if we can, JaVale, see if you can get the tip and see if you can get an easy one. But it's not like, all right, let's draw up the tip play. It's just like, JaVale, see if you can get something, see if you can get an easy one to start the game. And we always try to find something easy for our bigs or our others, because Bron, AD,
you just use the air quotes for others.
Yeah.
I don't like how the others has become a thing. Well, someone on the TNT crew is a big fan of the others, and I like mm-hmm. the TNT. That You're one of the others.
I mean, there's nothing wrong. I have no problems with being one of the others. You know, our stars, we know who they are, our all stars. And they're going to get their shots. They're going to get their looks. They're going to get rhythm. And to start the game, they want to, you know, either get, the bigs, throw them a bone early. So, you know, cause they're going to be our rim protectors and rebounding for us, doing all the dirty work, or one of our others, a look. Just get a rhythm, cause you know, most of the game, you know, Bron AD, you know, Bron's gonna have a lot of action of the ball in his hands or AD in the post. So I know Frank does a great job of, you know, trying to start the game, differently.
The old Bill Cartwright. You're too young for the Bill Cartwright.
Yes,
thing.
I am.
The
Bulls I know who he
Bill,
is though.
The Bulls would feed Bill Cartwright, mm-hmm. like first possession every game. All right, big fella.
Here you
take
go.
A jump hook, yeah. get a fadeaway, whatever. And then the rest of the game, Michael and Scotty are gonna do the heavy lifting.
There you go.
Are you guys better than you thought you would be before the season?
No. I thought we would be good. I think our record is better than I thought it would be. But I thought we would be good. At the same time, I thought we would be better in certain scenarios and situations. We've lost to one sub-500 team, which is good because that doesn't usually...
Recently, right?
Yeah, Orlando.
Orlando, that's right.
And usually that happens more often than like it happens. You get random strange nights like that. So that's a given. But the teams that are above 500, the losses that we do have, certain the performances that we've had, and not all of them are bad, but I thought we could have won a lot, some of those games. And I think it'll be better for us in the long run. But, you know, before the season, I predicted us to be probably this good, just our record not be as good as it is right now. We have 8 losses right now.
Yeah, the losses to teams above 500, for a little bit, it was a story. And then mm-hmm. you went into Utah and you drilled Utah, and then you went somewhere else into Houston, I think, and mm-hmm. drilled Houston. Now it's kind of back a little. Like every time you lose to an above 500 team, like last night in Boston was bad. Is that a concern at all within the team, or is this just like, man, it's a long season? Like all these games kind of blend in together.
We have so many vets that have been around the league for so long. I think guys are so used to knowing that it's a long season and just flushing certain games, regardless if it's above or below 500 team. Obviously, you want to play well, you want to do well, but you know, you just kind of just flush it. You know, when especially when it goes happens that bad.
So this is I think part of the reason I was very optimistic about the Lakers, but part of the reason I remember Bill Simmons and I argued about this on a podcast. He was pessimistic was because of, well, they have these centers and AD's a center and LeBron's a four. And like, what does that mean for Kuzma? And there was sort of some wondering about how all the roster would fit together. But I'm more interested. You come off a championship in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
You have options in free agency that we can talk about. Free agency was a little bit strange for you.
Yes, it was. For a lot of people, I would say.
But you, as you're winning the championship in Toronto, you are at least vaguely aware of, like, weird stuff is happening with the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
Magic resigns out of nowhere in a press conference before telling his owners. Then there's like the coaching search and Frank's the third choice and like, well, so like from the outside, was there a perception among players that like, boy, the Lakers are a little bit of a mess, or was it just you're not even thinking about that?
Yeah. I was like, man, first of all, if people who know me know that I'm a very frugal person and I don't like to live in expensive places or spend a lot of money. So LA just in general was like, man, nah, taxes are crazy. It's expensive. I'm not doing it. Alongside the show, we call it show. I was like, it looked like it's a show going on over there right now. But even with all that being said, when you get Anthony Davis, that changes the storyline for everybody. Now everybody's like, Bron and Anthony Davis, who would not want to play with those guys? You already have a championship contender just with those two guys alone. And they had Kuz on roster still. There's only 3 of them. And I think maybe Troy, there was maybe 4 people on roster before they started signing free agent. They were still waiting on Kawhi.
No, it was a very strange free agency period.
Everybody was waiting on Kawhi. So,
including
people.
You.
Yes.
Did you know he was at Drake's house?
I did not know. I did not know what he was doing. I know what was going on. We spoke a couple times here and there just to see updates because I'm trying to see my options are and seeing if they're going to wait for me because a lot of teams are waiting for him. And I'm waiting on certain teams and certain teams are waiting on me, like, you know, how the story goes. So the game goes, the free agency goes. So I'm trying to see where he's at and like, yeah, where's your head at? Are you thinking about this? If you are, you know, I'll just go here because I don't want to let this one slide. If I wait too long, they might offer this deal to somebody else. luckily I was in a very good position where the teams waited on me and they waited on it, and it worked out the way I wanted it to.
I was going to say, so you obviously had one team that waited, that's the Lakers. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure there was a second team that waited that has a friendlier income tax, regime than mm-hmm. California. Yeah. But was there a team that you were interested in that fell away as the process went on?
No. The team that I was interested in that didn't fall away was Dallas. They actually waited for me for the decision to happen before they moved to offering other guys, which was that I was in a lucky, you know, blessed position, and they showed a lot of love and respect and interest. It was amazing. You know, Mark and you know, Coach Carlisle handled the situation greatly. And hopefully no love lost. So we still speak, say hello, and, you know, have good times when we see each other. But, you know, they were very interested. They were recruiting very hard. And, it was a place that I almost jumped the gun and went early because I wasn't sure what was happening with the LA situation or Kawhi.
Did the Paul George thing catch you by surprise like it did most people?
Yeah, but not as much as, I guess, the reason why I think Kawhi made a decision, it had to be one or two in the morning Pacific time. So California time is after midnight, I think. And it's middle of the night. And I was like, the reason why he probably made, cause I don't think he really knew. But once that happened, it made sense to me why he made a decision when he made a decision. So I think he got news that this was happening and that they got Paul coming there. So he was like, all right, I can make my decision now because this is going to be
a team he wanted.
Yeah.
Does it seem strange that you just won a championship in Toronto and two of you guys are gone? Like it was just, the team is still really good, which I think they're even better than I thought they were going to be.
They're very good.
But that team is going to go down as one of the all time. That's just a little strange. Like one team and out, right?
Yes. You don't see it often where you get a group of guys put together and the first year they make something special happen. I think Boston may have did it.
Yeah, with the big three.
Yeah, the first year, but after that, that's it.
But then they stayed and like tried to win more.
Yeah. I think ultimately, if it could happen cap wise, it probably would have based on Kawhi's decision, obviously.
If Toronto had maybe gotten another guy.
But I think he knew that I think we were already over the cap at the time and they couldn't bring everybody back. And I think he might have known that. So if he went back, I still wouldn't have been, they didn't have space for me to go back. So I think him knowing that they couldn't bring the same team together. And also, I said, I'm sure other factors came into play.
I was going to say, I think there were some other factors.
Some other factors came into play for sure.
I'm not 100%. You would know better than me. I'm not 100% convinced that Toronto was really like in play. You think they were in play?
I think so. I think they offered, I had a good
deal. For sure they offered.
They could have offered him the most money.
Yes.
It's a city that loved him a lot. I think he liked it there. It was a good city. Mind you, it was the opposite of California and Texas. It was a little cold, but, you know, he was a god there. I mean, he's a god wherever he goes, but for
sure. All of you are going to be.
For sure, he was a god there in Canada and can do whatever he wanted there.
What's something you've learned about Anthony Davis as a basketball player, as just a person, now that you've been around him this closely that you didn't know before?
IQ-wise, how high IQ he is, how fast he picks things up without having to actually go through them, just talking it through or walking through it or watching it. He doesn't have to necessarily go through it or practice it a bunch of times. He'd be like, all right, now I got it. He's like, okay, we're going to do this? All right. I'll get it done. Defensively, just said how active, how much he covers ground quickly, his reflexes. And, off the court, I mean, he's a very, very similar to LeBron. Those guys are very humble guys that enjoy their teammates. They enjoy hanging out and kicking it and, you know, bringing everybody together. And they're the reason why our chemistry is so good off the court, because they have a group chat. They're the ones chiming in and talking and making other guys feel comfortable to talk and bring things to the table, or you know, ask questions or talk in the group chat, because you know they're the leaders and they talk about everything. We hang out, we do everything together, and we have fun, man. We have fun regardless of win or losing. It's been probably the most fun season I've had.
Really?
Yeah, off the court by far.
Really?
Yeah,
by far.
By far.
Is it just dinners? Is it like, are you planning?
It's everything.
Fun stuff in cities on
all
the road?
The above,
like,
man.
What have
all
you done above. That's fun? Has there been like bowling or paintball or anything like that?
You know, we get. I mean, today. I'm not going to go, but they have a place set up for people to go. They have a store set up to where we can go visit a store. You know, some guys will get together, do an escape room or something like that. But
an escape room.
Yeah, I haven't got a chance to do that one yet.
I've never done that. That seems like a lot of fun.
I haven't done it either, but I know some people have done it. It sounds like a lot
of
fun.
Who claims to be good at, who claims to be like the MVP of the Lakers escape room?
I don't, well, Dwight was the one that brought it to the table and said he's done a couple of them and wanted to do it as a group. I think some guys did it, a small group.
I don't
trust
Dwight in an escape room.
He has an experience.
You know who I want in the escape room?
Who's that?
Rondo.
Doe is very, very crafty, smart, high IQ guy. He's going to be a coach someday, I believe. But yeah, so things like that, but just off the court, everything from the plane to the bus, we all hanging out, kicking it, watching shows, talking about stuff, training room, hanging out, dinners, and going out.
What's the show of choice right now among the Lakers? What's the show that's getting a lot of the water cooler talk?
Not as much now as it was when it was trending. A lot of guys were watching You and talking about You. It was on Netflix. It's about a young man who's kind of a stalker.
And clearly,
he's fixated
out
on this female and different females, different seasons. But there's a bunch of different stuff too that come along. There probably some of them were Game of Thrones, and Game of Thrones is over. Not many people watch Power on this team, but I watch Power. But yeah, there's different shows that come along, and you know, we discuss it, we talk about it, and guys, some guys play video games, some guys do different things. Everywhere you go, there's going to be clicks. It's going to be clicky. There's not as much here. Everybody gets along. Everybody hangs out. But there's your group of guys that play video games, a group of guys that do that. But we all eventually do everything together. And when we go out together as a group last night. I think the whole team was together last night, even though we got in late. And sometimes when we go out somewhere, it's usually, you know, you're missing probably four or five guys. Last night, I don't think we're missing anybody.
After landing here.
Yeah.
Super late at night.
Yeah, we had a day off today, so we were
just
able to
just have a glass of wine and chat.
We had a day off today, so we were able to, you know, explore, see the city a little bit, and then, you know, enjoy each other, get some food after, and then come home.
Who was your crew with the Spurs? Because the Spurs, 2013-2014, the two final Spurs, mm-hmm. running into LeBron, your career just keeps intersecting with LeBron. they were a dinner team. Pop is a dinner guy yes. for his coaches. Manu, I did a huge profile on Manu Ginobili 3 or 4 years ago. They all, him and Patty Mills and Splitter and Diaw talked very lovingly about the kind of internet, the United Nations crew, they called themselves, going out to dinner. Were you a part of the crew?
I would go with them sometimes, but it was different throughout the years. So different guys coming in and out, going. You know, early on was DeJuan Blair, Gary Neal was around some, Steven Jackson was around some, hung out with him, so, like those guys a little bit. Then later on came, you know, Rudy, LaMarcus, those are some of my guys too. I was close. I was close to Patty because we were there for so long together as well. But I hung out with all those, whenever we got a chance, we'll do dinners and stuff. But a lot of times they were simple. So a lot of those guys had families, were older.
Yeah.
Stay in the room. Timmy probably ordered room service.
Coach guys, Tim Duncan. Can you believe
guys,
that?
Yeah, no, that was strange to see too. But most guys that stay in the room, order room service and, you know, took care of their bodies, which I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but you know, we had fun different ways that way, but it wasn't as much as off the court of doing a bunch of group like things that we're doing now with this team.
I think that was a play way of saying the Spurs were old. There were a lot of Spurs that were old.
They were very, yes, experience. Simple. It's very simple and professional. Let's say it that way.
Those
they were unprofessional, but they just kept it very, very professional, I guess.
Those back-to-back finals were like capital M moments for a lot of NBA fans because they were peak LeBron. Mm-hmm. They were the second year, particularly peak Spurs, beautiful game.
Yes.
And just sort of some of the epic events of those series. And for me, they were like the first finals that I went to in person and covered. So like they're memorable for me. So let's talk about a couple of big moments from those. I rewatched the Ray Allen shot. You were on Ray Allen after a switch. There were, you started on Wade. There was a back screen. You ended up close to Ray Allen. Mm-hmm. LeBron misses and then you're closer to the rebound than I thought. So like, can you see all of that in your head right now?
I saw the ball coming off and I remember trying to jump but couldn't get off the ground because I think Chris Bosh was on top of, like he was jumping over my back type thing. Like,
and Manu was right behind you jumping too.
I couldn't even, yeah, and there's a bunch of us just trying to get the rebound. And I remember him getting the rebound and just kicking it out to Ray and I was like, oh, but every time I see I can't rewatch it. I try to avoid it, try to scroll past it. That shot, yeah, I can't rewatch it.
Let's dig even deeper into it. So when I was doing Manu, that was maybe the low point of Manu's career that game.
He had a rough year that year.
That series in particular was rough for him. And I talked to, I mean, this story has been told including by Pop, but after that game, you guys go out to dinner as a team at El Gabbiano, I think in Miami. Mm-hmm. And the stories I heard from that dinner were, I mean, Manu told me this, Diago told me this, like it's the only dinner I can ever remember where we did nobody, like Pop went around, but like our table was dead silent. Nobody. So what do you remember of that dinner?
Exactly that. I think it was still a feel of the locker room, like a dead locker room at dinner where guys were, you know, still heads down thinking like just daydreaming. What the hell happened? We were just shocked and awe still. And devastated to where, you know, you sit in the locker room, you just have your head in your hand. I think guys were still like that at dinner. And could really, I don't think half the guys ate, couldn't enjoy a meal. I don't know if even some of the guys had families, even brought them, and they just kind of steered away from their families, didn't want to see him speak or even be seen out by anybody, family or friends. I think we just went to dinner, had half-assed meal, ate a little bit, and went back to the room and, you know, tried to flush it the next day, but it was something you can't, that game, you can't really flush the way you want to.
So I remember Tim Duncan missing, people call it a bunny. It wasn't a bunny in game seven.
It wasn't a bunny.
It was a tough, it was a short
right hook. Yeah.
But Battier was like in his jersey playing good defense.
Mm-hmm.
I had forgotten how late in the game that was. There was a minute left and you guys were down two and he misses a putback. And Miami calls timeout going the other way.
Game seven, this is.
Yeah, game seven, the next game.
We actually played a pretty good game seven.
You played a bit, considering what had happened.
Yeah.
And I remember Tim slapping the floor.
I do remember that.
What I didn't remember, and I watched it again last night, was when play stops, and I think the Heat call a timeout to design a play,
mm-hmm.
Tim just bends over, hands on his knees, or maybe one hand on his knees and one hand putting the jersey over his face,
mm-hmm.
and just holds that pose for like 4 seconds as you guys are walking back to the huddle. I was like, man, I forgot. That is like as gutted. Like you never saw Tim Duncan like that.
Tim was not a guy that showed a lot of emotion on the... Oh, he did. He did. He showed emotion, but not a lot of it. In significant times, significant moments. And when he showed emotion, you know something big, like this is a big momentum swing or as big as happened, or something extremely bad is going on where he's like, damn, I knew this is going to cost us. Or, you know, this is it. This is a turning point for us. So when he does show emotion, you know something's up.
Were you confident that the team was going to bounce back from that the next year the way that they did?
No. I don't think anybody could predict that. I was spoiled back then. I was, as a youngster, we went to the finals, went to the Western Conference Finals every year, damn near, and then the finals and got back again. So losing the first, second round was something that I didn't know of. So I was lucky enough to do that. So I always had the confidence like, oh, we'll get back. We can get to Western Conference Finals easier. We'll get back to the finals depending on OKC was really good. We always had trouble with them.
We're going to talk about that series.
So depending on how healthy they were, I was like, we can get back. But Miami's going to be tough, man. They're going to be tough. So that whole year, I think we were just, you know, focused on trying to prepare and be perfect to beat Miami. Not even OKC or Miami. It was always them. And it was a tough year. But also didn't know if we would get everybody back, the team. And you don't see many groups come back or stay together for 3 or 4 years like that. Now, especially after getting to the finals or getting to the Western Conference Finals. Usually guys leave, go here. Teams seek out and want these guys. We were fortunate enough to keep those guys together. But when I saw, I guess, the stars aligning up, I was like, you know what? Halfway point toward the end of the season, I'm like, we're playing pretty good basketball. I think we have a shot. You know, we have a pretty good group. I think have a little more depth than we did the year before, maybe. But it was hard to, you couldn't really predict that.
In that, the first finals, the one you lost, I looked it up. You were 25 of 38 from three through the first five games of the series. There was like Danny Green might win finals MVP chatter. Mm-hmm. I remember in that series, the Heat called it the Danny Green cut because you screwed them up with a cut that they hadn't seen before, which was on the pick and roll.
Uh-huh.
You would sneak across the baseline from mm-hmm. the weak side to the strong side, which you're typically not supposed to do because that's the ball side.
Mm-hmm.
And they had no idea it was coming. Did you just make that up? Did Pop spot that? Like, how did that come about? They called it after you.
It's kind of I can't say I made it up or I came up with it. And I wouldn't say Pop came up with it, but we had a similar thing, terminology that they would always use called a Charlie Ward cut. And I think
he used
to do it against them when they played the Knicks, I would assume, in the finals. It's like when they feed the post or when you double the post, instead of cutting through the lane and going opposite, he would cut through the lane and go strong side and he would get an open shot. So that was an option. And every time, you know, I would think that's a damn good cut. So we called Charlie Ward, and instead of, you know, I would never be the guy at the top feeding the post. We didn't feed the post that much anywhere. Then anyway,
not at that time.
No. So it wasn't like I was post feeding, standing and cutting down the middle, but you know, running baseline to baseline and going strong corner when a defense turns his head. I thought it was always because when he turns, he's looking to see you, and his natural reaction is to go back to the corner to
where you just were.
And even if you don't, like, even if there is no pick and roll action, if he turns, he just thinks you're in the corner. So if you cut through to the side, he has no idea where you're at. And by that time he sees you, you might get an open shot. So it just so happened during that playoffs or during that series, we ran a lot of pick and roll, side pick and roll on that side. And my guy would always help on the roller because they were good at rotating and rolling. But it messed up rotations if guys are moving. So you can't really rotate an X out or find a guy if he's moving to the opposite side. And Manu was great at being patient and finding guys, and it kept working. So I just kept doing it.
No, they had no idea what to do with it. You mentioned Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my all time favorite playoff series, 2014 Western Conference Finals. Mm-hmm. You go up 2-0. Ibaka mm-hmm. comes back for game three. They roar back and tie it 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people with your team. Back then, less so now. I know when it was 2-2, there was a moment of real doubt, at least within the people I knew on that team, mm-hmm. of, is this Thunder team, is this just a bad matchup for us? What can we do to stop these guys who are long and athletic? What do you remember about 2-2? Like, you've been thinking about Miami, you've been thinking about revenge, mm-hmm. all of a sudden you're faced with this team that knocked you out 2 years before, mm-hmm. in 2012. What do you remember about that moment leading into Game 5?
I think that exact remembrance of them beating us a couple years prior when we were up 2-0 on them and they won 4 straight. And it was like, damn, back then I was young though, but I was like, and then I went from starting to not playing at all, basically. I was like, I'm not going to let that happen. At any point, I'm not going to fade, be passive, or, you know, allow myself to not be a factor in this series. Regardless of what happens, but I thought we were a better team at that point. We had some doubts, and we knew Serge came back, and he wasn't 100%, but he had a calf injury, but he was still good. But Kawhi was older. He was, you know, a better player. And I remember, I said, me and him taking a lot of pride in being the defensive backcourt, trying to stop the KD and Westbrook, and then obviously Serge. But there was some doubt, but not as much as people thought it was.
I feel like they switched you onto KD. In
possibly.
Game 5 of that series, but Kawhi on Russ or something possibly. Like that.
We might have did that. Yeah. We might have did that. I think because we knew KD, smaller guards, can kind of get in him a little more. They try to see that matchup was. Kawhi had a hell of a steal in one of those games to seal one of the wins. I remember Tony going out, I think, too. Tony might have got hurt in one of those games.
So game Patty 6, these games, there are just too many games to remember them all,
yeah.
But game 6 is one I remember exactly where I was. I was not there. I remember exactly mm-hmm. where I was watching it.
OKC, right?
OKC. Mm-hmm. I wasn't at the game, but I remember where I watched it. Tony got hurt in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Corey Joseph comes in. And in that moment, it was like, uh-oh. Like,
yeah.
This is going back for 7. I don't know if Corey Joseph is going to be ready for this. And you hold the fort.
Corey and Patty, man. Those guys were huge. And we closed out with those guys. And we've done it before, so that's why I was confident in them. But defensively, we knew we just needed me and Kawhi not to let what happened in 2012 or whatever year it was happen again. We were more mature, older, better players, especially defensively, guarding those guys.
You remember his chase down block on Russ at the end of that game?
That's what it was.
Yeah.
I thought it was more of a steal than a block, but I remember that sealed it.
It was kind of a midair swipe.
Yeah. And that kind of sealed the game, and I was like, that's what we needed. I was like, thank God he saved us, because that bucket would have changed a lot of the game, the series. But there's some big plays all the way down the line. Not just from him, but Patty, Corey, everybody. But defensively, we knew we were different players in that series, so it wasn't much doubt, and we knew we were a better team than we were in 2012.
Is it weird to play against Kawhi now, and have you learned anything about the Clippers matchup from the two games you've played so far? You're playing again next week in LA. I will be at that game. But
are we?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so worried about a focus on day at a time.
Yeah.
Everybody's got certain games circled on the calendar, especially LA fans. It is weird playing against them.
Does he talk?
Here and there, just in between stuff, but he's a focused guy. He's a professional. He's competitive. He's not, when you're on the floor and you're not on his team, you're the enemy, you know?
Yeah.
He wants to win. Everybody wants to win. All those guys are great, but the first time we played them, they didn't have everybody healthy. We didn't have everybody healthy. Second time, same. They just got Paul back second game. I think we're learning as we go each time we play them. But we knew second game, we for sure, we let that, we felt like we had them that game. We had a bad second half. First game, we felt like we had a shot, but it was so early in season. We're still like
those opening the big magnitude opening night
game.
It's
a preseason game. It's a glorified preseason game to me, but it was a playoff like atmosphere in that building.
Well, remember the first Durant game in Golden State was you guys Spurs Warriors, right? And the Spurs went into Golden State and I believe blew them out. Wasn't that the first game of that season?
Possibly. Yeah. Yes, it was. It was. I do remember that. It was a great game to start the season off, but I said it's still early in the season.
It's so early.
Nobody. Only reason why that game might have been more of a regular season game is because both teams had those teams together for some time.
Yeah.
You know, so, but this year, everybody has new faces, new teams. When you have new faces, new team, it's a regular season game, but it's so early. It's like a glorified, to me, it's just like a, it doesn't really, these games don't really dictate who's the better team, if that makes sense. It's just early in the season, it's the team that's better right now or just won the game at that time.
No, the West so far has stratified into like a top six, like a pretty, I mean, we can parse.
It's crazy because everything is so close.
There's a top
one or two
six.
Games, teams can go from 2-6, 6-3. And
Houston's in a free fall down to six now. Oklahoma City's kind of in a tier of their own at seven, budging up towards the top six. And then there's a whole mess of teams for number eight. Take that top six for me other than you guys. So that's Clippers, Rockets, Nuggets, Jazz, Mavericks. Has there been a team in there that you guys have played? You've played all of them now. It's like, oh, they're a little better than I thought, like just looking at their roster, like that's kind of a fun matchup in a way I didn't anticipate.
I think Dallas has surprised a lot of people, even with their injuries, because they had Luka out, they had KP out, and they still have done pretty well. Utah has been streaking pretty well. They've been solid. OKC's done better than the people expected. But I think we expected all those teams to be great.
Yeah.
You know, it's the West. I don't think anybody was like we.
The Dallas games between you and Dallas have been fun.
They've been good. They're a damn good team. I said all those teams that we expected, even Denver, they were great last year. I honestly think they're good. They're very good this year. I still think they're kind of figuring it out. I think last year they had a better rhythm, but they're a really good team. I think I expected them to probably, I wouldn't say upset some more teams.
I believe they're second right now. In the West.
I think they dropped.
Are they third now? Whatever it is, they're either second or third. Well, Utah is right there. Those three teams are neck and neck and neck.
I think they have all the same record, but I think it's by whoever won. Yeah. Clippers might have edge on them. I don't know.
Yeah, the West is no fun. So you guys have all of these different identities where you start big, like everyone that plays you. I just saw a few Celtics people at the David Stern Memorial and they're like, man, not the players, but just people who work for the team. Like, man, they are like huge, huge. And then you can go small with AD at center. Then you can play these sort of like AD at center, but you have LeBron and Kuzma. So it's like two fours are on the floor at the same time. Do you like, is there any one of those identities that you feel like the last 40 games you got to polish up a little bit? Is there anyone that hasn't felt super comfortable yet?
No, I think we always figure it out, whoever's on the floor. We have a good group of guys. I think the toughest thing is because of injuries and because we have so many good guys, Coach Vogel likes to figure out the flow of the game and who's clicking, who's not, and the rotations are different. So that's probably the toughest part is figuring out, all right, what are the rotations going to be tonight? Who's going to have a click and who's going to, and figuring out what lineup he's figuring out too. He has a tough job, you know, himself. Think it's easy because you have a lot of great guys, but you got to figure out ways to put guys, make them successful and also have lineups and also see, you know, who deserves what minutes. And it's just a lot. So I think that's the toughest thing is guys getting used to rotations, getting set rotations or getting used to the minutes they're getting. And I guess getting used to what groups they'll be with. But for the most part, I said they figure it out.
A few more quick ones, and I'll let you go because you got to. What is the internal verdict on Kyle Kuzma's hair?
a lot of different. I wouldn't say negative, but there's a lot of chatter about it. You know, a lot of guys make jokes. He's comfortable with himself. He's comfortable with his own skin. And a lot of guys say, you have one more haircut, man, before we're done with you. Or one more hairstyle. But
I don't think you can take that into the playoffs. I think before the playoffs, he's got to change it to something else.
Yeah, I mean, I think he should go back to his normal color hair and do whatever you want with it. But, you know, he said he's a guy that likes to change it up. Like, he gets bored and does different stuff.
In game six of the finals last year, mm-hmm. you became a household name in the Low household, my household, because all the significant others of NBA reporters, mm-hmm. all they're cheering for is the series to be over, the yeah. finals to be over. Mm-hmm. So my wife is texting me, Toronto's going to win. It's over. Like, this is, I'll see you tomorrow. Yeah. My daughter's going to be so excited.
Game five, all of a sudden,
Danny Green throws this pass along the sideline mm-hmm. at the end of regulation with the Raptors up two, and it gets intercepted. And my wife is like, what in the world just happened? What did Danny Green do? So, like, in that moment, like, are you just praying that the Warriors miss? Or do you just have to move on? Like, me, a weak person, I would be like, my whole life is ruined. I need to get out of this arena right now.
No, I was very, very disappointed, upset, and frustrated with myself, of course. I was like, damn, I think I just cost us the game. For sure. But, you know, coach and teammates were like, no, we got this. We're good. Don't even worry about it. We're good. Even knowing that, I was like, you know, I think we can. The thing was more frustrating was that I wasn't able to even try to get it back on the other end. So as soon as I made the turnover, it was like, all right, I was in there for a little bit to make free throws, and I was put in a position where I don't think they were going to foul. I was in a corner at half court. I was going to turn it over at half court. Either they're going back court or out of bounds, or them stealing it or trying to find somebody and try to. Didn't work, obviously, the way I expected it to. And I couldn't really see after I threw the pass. I got slapped in the face when I threw it. But after that, I was like, oh, man. And even more frustrated, I was like, I can't even, like, get a steal or try to get it back or come up with a defensive play. And I was like, you know what, my guys, even though they did take care of business, it still, to this day, bothers me. And it'll probably always bother me.
Bother my wife considerably.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But now that I have you, I forgot that, like, that series was the weirdest finals I've ever covered. Not that I've covered that many, but mm-hmm. 8 or 9 at this point. And it was weird because of the Durant thing. And then all the injuries that happened after.
Yeah, Clay, KD.
All of it. Mm. But that, when is he going to come back speculation? And then,
yeah, that started before even our series.
Before your series. And then that game, him walking into the arena, him getting hurt early in the second quarter, and just crumpling down. I've said this before, I will never forget my line of sight, seeing it happen, what the atmosphere was like. But you're the other team. So, like, how do you, even starting before the series, how do you navigate that? Like, did you have an if KD comes back game plan? Did you just sort of, like, do you just have to train yourself to, like, we prepared as if KD
was playing. And I think most teams do. Like, you know, he's not going to sit out. This guy's fine. Like, everybody gets healthy somehow, some way. And I think we wanted him to play. We wanted him to come back. We wanted their best shot. We want to beat the champs the way they were champions, a healthy team. Mind you, it didn't hurt that some of those guys were not healthy. DeMarcus coming back halfway through. Even Looney, I think, sat out again, came back.
Right.
So many guys had some injuries. Clay sat out a game, came back. It was crazy how many guys were coming in and out. But we prepared as if everybody's playing. And we wanted to win that way with everybody playing. Didn't happen that way, unfortunately. But, you know, nobody is going to feel bad for them. Like, nobody felt bad for them. Nobody
I'm just more curious about the mental state of being the other team in that situation, particularly that.
We didn't want it to be one of those type of championships where it was like an asterisk, because, oh, you guys won because everybody's hurt going into it. Mentally, we're like, you know what? We want to beat them at their best, 100%. I think everybody wants that as a competitor. You want to say, oh, you guys won, but it didn't really count because nobody played or everybody was hurt. Some people may say that still, but 20 years from now, not many people are going to remember or care. It's going to be a banner up, and then everybody has their rings, and they're still going to call you champion.
No, no one's going to care. That game doesn't make it. But what about the huddle and the delay after he gets injured? How do you just sort of, as a human being?
I think we lost that game because
you did lose that game.
And I think it had a lot to do with, and you try not to let those things bother you mentally, physically, whatever, emotionally, but those things, hard to focus or stay locked in on the game when something like that happens, a devastating injury to a guy like that. Even Clay, when he got hurt, it's like we didn't know it was ACL after the game, but it was like, damn, those type of injuries, when they happen, it takes a toll on you as a person, not just as a player, but it's hard to stay locked in on the game and stay focused and, you know, not think to like, damn, you know, this guy's hurt, or I might have hurt this guy, or this, you know, his career might be over. And just, you know, basketball's a game at the end of the day. There's bigger, more important stuff to life than it is, you know, basketball. And I think we all know each other, played against and with each other for so many years. We all care about each other as people, that we hope we have healthy, good careers and continue to do so for as long as possible. And for anybody's injury or for any injury or career to cut short because of it, you know, and you realize that at that moment, it will change the whole game, the whole outcome of how you see the game, the whole outcome of how you play the game.
Last one, anything in particular you want to see from the Lakers in the last 40 games? Is there, or from yourself, is there a particular part of your game or a particular part of the Lakers game that you're like, let's, before the playoffs, let's see how that unfolds. Let's lock that
just
in.
Just consistency. Consistency. Individually and as a group, for myself and as a group, us be consistent. We have great spurts, great stretches. There's times where we have lapses and we can't have those lapses. And I think, you know, it's still, I wouldn't say early, but we're halfway through, and I think we'll be able to tell by All-Star, after All-Star, where we are. We want to be playing, obviously, great basketball for 48 minutes. And nobody ever plays perfect basketball, but we want to be able to have no lapses for as less amount of time or less than another team. And hopefully by March, we have, you know, we're playing great basketball for at least 44 minutes, 42 minutes, you know. So.
Well, look, you're going to be a mainstay in the playoffs again. It's been... Your path has been one of the more inspiring, interesting paths in the NBA. Thank from you. Cut in Cleveland to, people forget, played in Slovenia during the lockout, G League, all of that. Now you're a two-time champion. You're on the most star-studded team in the league. So, and you're going to be a mainstay in the playoffs again. So, Danny, thank you for taking a little time to
thank
come
you.
On. I will be on Inside the Green Room,
yes,
hopefully,
sir.
Next
yep.
week in Los Angeles.
Come to the show, man.
And that, by the way, people should listen to that. That's really good. You've been really good at that.
Yeah, I had a question for you.
Okay.
It's simple. You know, a lot of players are doing podcasts now.
Yes.
How do you think the player podcast has changed the game or the social media aspect of, or the media aspect of, you know, the sports world?
I think the player, it's not just the player's podcast, but it's the player's Tribune and stuff like that, right? And the, and, you know, it's funny, when that stuff started happening, there was a lot of natural sort of hostility from the traditional media because, but that's our job. That's our job. I never really felt that, but like, that's our job. And I think that quieted down pretty fast because right, even before you started your podcast and the players started, even before Uninterrupted and all that, even just the Players Tribune, you could tell there are just some guys who are going to be more comfortable telling the full-on candid truth in these mediums than they are with us. And you know what? We're going to be better at some things. We're going to be better at doing whatever it is we do. Like, I got to pick my all-stars this week and all that analysis. Like, that's our wheelhouse. And some of the players are not going to care. They'll come on my podcast and do this and that and be just as candid. But we're going to get more of the unfiltered good stuff
from there on
because those other environments exist. Like that Deion Waiters essay in the Players Tribune, that Allen Iverson essay in the Players Tribune. We don't get those without the Players Tribune. Some of the stuff, like when you got Siakam on your podcast, you got him before I did. And I've been on the Spicy P bandwagon from the beginning. And I was mad because it's like he's going to get Pascal to tell stories that I'm not going to be able to get him to tell as easily. And it's been proven true, I think.
You can still get him, I think. So you think
I got him last year.
It's impacted you guys in a negative way or in a positive way?
No, I think it's been fine. Like, I think whatever hostility and suspicion that there was, I think that faded away because you know what? There's an infinite appetite for NBA coverage. Okay. And if you're, the thing that's interesting to me, now you got me rolling. It's your fault if you're late to this thing. I wonder if you've experienced this as a host. A lot of people start podcasts because they think it's easy. And I've seen a lot of podcasts come and go because people think, well, if it's just me and my buddies talking hoops, like that'll be good.
It's not that easy.
And then like 6 months later, you see some of those podcasts go because listeners are very, very discerning. And if you don't do the work and you're not good at it, like
doing
it's,
your research.
So have you found it harder than you thought?
For sure. Well, my guys make it easy. They
so
make
you got
it easy
guys.
For me.
I don't got guys.
Harrison and Amjad, you've spoken to them. They're amazing. They do their research, they do their homework, they set up everything, they get the people. Well, I help trying to get people, certain people on. But they do the research of topics we want to talk about, what things are relevant, what things they want to hit on, what people want to listen to. So they've been great with that. And they make my job easier. So I just show up and like, okay, this is what we're going to talk about. Okay, cool. But if you don't have those guys, I know Kuz was thinking about, he's interested in doing one. And I think it was more than he expected, more of a handful, because he didn't have guy, he'd have to do everything himself, which it's a handful. It's a lot. And you said, so if you don't have those guys in place, it's going to be very tough to do.
The one thing that will be interesting for players is, are you going to shy away from asking the uncomfortable questions that fans are interested in? Now, there are uncomfortable questions that are just uncomfortable for the sake of uncomfortable. There's no real value to them. But if you get a guy on that's in the middle of trade talks or that did something controversial or something, like, do you feel a responsibility? Hey, I know I'm a player. We're all in the same boat. We're part of the same group. But, like, the fans are curious. I got to ask those questions.
That's why Harrison, I got my guy Harrison to ask those. He asks the uncomfortable ones. I ask the comfortable ones. And I make it – we make sure that they're comfortable answering what is – or they're comfortable with the questions we're asking. And if they don't like what the answer might be, so we can, all right, we'll edit that, we'll cut this out, that, et cetera, when you have your own. We want anybody that comes on our show to feel like they're at home or in the barbershop, you know, in the shop, where they can comfortably talk about whatever they want to talk about freely without getting in trouble. So we make sure that we get their permission for everything first, and also what they're comfortable talking about, what they're not comfortable before they jump on the show.
Yeah, you got it. If you're going to bring up something uncomfortable, I do think it's, I don't like to spring stuff on people. If it's in the news and stuff, I don't need to, I'm going to ask you about getting traded or whatever. But if I know something that isn't public and that's, let's say, interesting, I'm not going to spring it on you
right away.
I don't think that's fair.
Yeah. So you got to give people warning. But so most of the times we prep them pretty well and ask them what they, topics we want to talk about, and if they're comfortable, we're not talking about it. And then they say, you know what, all right, we'll find something else.
You'll never get LeBron though, because LeBron will go on uninterrupted.
True, but I probably will never ask LeBron.
Who's the one guy in the league that, like, I gotta get that guy?
For me, I mean, I like, you know, I respect everybody, and I think the biggest thing for every NBA player is the respect from their peers. To be respected by those all-stars is the biggest thing. I don't, defensive awards. If a guy like James Harden said, yo, this guy can really guard, that means more to me than them giving me first team all defense. He's the best scorer in the league, and he says, yo, this guy is actually a pretty good defender. That's more of a compliment than the league saying, here's your first team all defensive award. So I love everybody's game. I think everybody has a story. Obviously all the all-stars are people's top guys, but it's hard to say that there's one. And obviously, everybody wants to hear about LeBron, Giannis, their stories. I want to hear about, you know, the up and coming guys that, like a Nunn,
Kendrick Nunn.
He's in Miami, who's been cut before, and he's in the running for Rookie of the Year.
How about Duncan Robinson?
Him too, shooter. I wonder how he got his name and when he was born. It sounds like the Twin Towers.
People feel like Duncan Robinson, like, all you hear is Williams College. Like, he was at Williams College, and then he went to Michigan. Duncan Robinson did a post-grad year at Phillips Exeter Academy in New Hampshire and like, barely knew that he was going to get playing time going into that year. That's crazier to me than Williams College.
Crazy. So those are the stories that are more interesting to me. But obviously, he said all the all-stars and even people outside of the basketball world, football world, baseball.
Interesting.
Even artists. Just knowing how they started, everybody in their craft, you know, we respect and honor. So we're interested. I'm interested in hearing all those stories and getting to know and learn people that I'm a fan of. And we're a fan of all basketball players, of each other, but we're probably more fan of actors and actresses or artists, hip hop, R&B, whatever it is, and learning them. But, I'm interested in all people, man.
Well, I look forward to providing you with your lowest rated episode of Inside the Green.
People are interested in hearing from you, man. People always, they're interested in anybody that comes on our show, especially you, because you've interviewed some pretty good people. You've had some big names come across your desk.
Sometimes.
And you've done some research on some things that said I wouldn't know half the stuff that you know, Duncan Rock. Like, I didn't know any of that stuff. So I'm interested. and I know the viewers are interested. So it'll be a lot of fun, and you'll like the set. They did it up, and I'm sure they'll do something special for you.
I'm excited now. I just hope you. Now, do I have to root for you to win the night before? Are you going to be in a good mood regardless? It's your podcast. If you're in a good mood,
usually
I'm
always
mood,
in a good mood. When I'm doing a podcast, I'm going to have fun, so I'm usually in a good mood. It makes it better when after a win to be able to do a podcast and you will talk about the win instead of the loss. But I'm always in a good mood when I'm doing the podcast.
All right, Danny, you got to go. Thank you for your time. Congratulations on a great career, and good luck in the next 40-plus games here with the Lakers.
Thank you, man. We'll need it.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.